The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles, brought to you by Huntworth. For all types of weather, for all types of terrain, all kinds of budgets, it's clothing that just works. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. Man, we're in November. I have been out after it. I would say it is officially deer season because I have poison ivy. So basically from November until Valentine's Day, I generally have poison ivy. So tonight, finally got in the game. Man, I've been struggling seeing deer more observationally than when we were in Indiana. There was some small deer that I could have killed. But tonight had a 2.5-year-old buck 10 yards behind me, and then worked off and just couldn't make the total archery challenge shot. Didn't think it was a good idea to try and shoot through some pines and stuff like that. But at least I felt like I was in the game tonight. I got bucks showing up on camera here. Probably going to get one or two more sits in before I head to Kansas. But really looking forward to it. Really, you know, getting to try out all this gear. You know, we talk a lot about gear and people have new gear coming out. And like that Huntworth Grayling hoodie. I just got one of those. Been using that with their heat boost base layers. And basically, that's kind of all I need. The vest is nice, but we've been having pretty mild temperatures here. I think we've only dipped into like the 20s like one time. And surprisingly, that sweatshirt vest combo is pretty slick. So, you know, we've talked about it, and that was one of the things I was saying that I'd like to try, and very, very impressed with it. Using some more gear, picked up some more stuff from Genesis 3D printing. That tether button, I love that thing. Very simple solution, very inexpensive solution to a problem maybe that you guys didn't know that you had. Definitely check that out. And those Latitude sticks, I mean, I'm using their X-Wing platform. Still not a platform guy, just because I hate setting it up. If anybody has any tips, tricks, anything for setting up platforms, let me know. But I continually absolutely hate it. So just more trouble than it's worth. But yeah, the sticks, the attachment method is freaking amazing. Super easy, super light. Generally, I'm using two sticks with aiders and then one stick without an aider. And then the platform, I think I've used four sticks one time this year. So really, really enjoying those. So definitely get over, check out our partners. Latitude, you can save 15% using code BHC. Big Shot Targets, you can save 10% using BCP as a code. And Spartan Forge, 25% off using code Bowhunter, and that's for the entire country. They got that LIDAR, they've got that predictive stuff. And I've been paying attention from that last podcast where the temperatures are dropping and the pressure is rising, like today. And I had a stud show up on one of my cameras that I chose not to hunt today. So we're going to go there tomorrow and check that out. But yeah, I mean, all of our sponsors, they help us out, help the show out. You know, we've already outlined how much they give back through the Patreon hunt, to our quarterly giveaways. So definitely check them out. Huntworth, Latitude, Big Shot, Spartan Forge, Genesis 3D, Lucky Buck, and then Zinger and Kanadi. Those guys are great. But one of the things that's been really awesome this year is our Patreon group is just slaying the deer. So Tyler Manning, he's the one who shot the does up at the deer camp there. He's tagged out. Robbie Signer, he was also at the Patreon camp. He's one of the three amigos. He's tagged out. The guy that's on this podcast, Mark, decoyed another buck in Missouri this past weekend. And so he's tagged out in Missouri, already killed one here in Michigan over the decoy. So that's super cool. And then Wyatt killed a doe down in Illinois. And I'm sure that I'm missing somebody. Oh, Tom Taylor is out in Kansas. He just killed a nice buck out there. And he's just chilling with the fall podcast guys, boiling skulls. And now he's chasing does with a longbow. So the community that we built is incredible. If you want to check that out. Patreon.com/ Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. Get in on that Marco Polo group if you're not. Pretty cool. Lot to keep up with, but good information, good community, really good group of guys there. So check that out. But this podcast, you know, going into the rut, you know, I don't know. It's hard. Maybe it started where you're at, but we just haven't seen the hard chasing and any of that right now. And it seems to be like that's the same thing that they're dealing with out in Kansas. I've got a couple of the Montana decoys I just picked up for going out there, and going to give some of this decoying a try. So if you're interested in that, you're going to love this podcast. Mark's been doing it here in Michigan. You know, can't use any of these tactics in Michigan, right? He's been doing it in Michigan and Missouri all over, and having success for the last, you know, 5-6 years. So definitely check it out. I know you guys are going to like this one. As always, thank you for listening. Enjoy the podcast. Tell somebody else if they haven't heard of us, and I appreciate every single one. Thanks for listening. All right, everybody. Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And this is the time of year where it's so hectic and crazy, like trying to schedule podcasts, trying to get guests, trying to get things that are like relevant, that aren't just like mail it in, like, oh, this is, you know, and it's exciting to hear like how, you know, our hunts go and things like that. And then, you know, trying to get people on with like pertinent information is tough. And I, to be honest with you, I really hate doing podcasts ahead of time. This one's like going to be like a week ahead of time, which is okay. But by the time like I'm recording it, putting it out, all that stuff, like I've forgotten like what we talked about or like what were the important points of it. So I really do like relish being in the moment of like in the chaos, like back when we first started, it would be like record a podcast, get done at like 2 a.m, then like have to publish it like that day. And I think like where this whole thing was born out of, that's where like I love being there. So this is kind of different, but so back on here with Mark, and we'll get into it. But at this airing date, a few weeks ago, Mark has killed a pretty good buck. Great buck from Michigan, compared to the ones he's got in Missouri, probably doesn't hold a candle. He's probably like, oh, I wouldn't have shot him at all. He needs 12 more years. But this podcast is kind of one, there's a couple of things. One, Mark's been on me about, you need to do a podcast about this. You need to do a podcast on this. And so we're going to talk some decoy strategies and stuff. And it's relatively, again, just like everything else in this podcast, more self-serving for me because I'm going to Kansas and they talk about like all of your, and this is Tom Taylor, I'm going to paraphrase what he said, but he basically said like all of those hokey Midwest tricks that never work in Michigan, you know, try them all in Kansas because those bucks will come running, you know, rattling, grunting, decoying, doing all the tarsal drags, all of those things. So this is to kind of get me into that mindset and look really funny here in Michigan. But another thing Mark had been saying is like he listens to some other podcasts, some running podcasts or basket weaving podcasts, snorkeling podcasts. I don't know what it was, but they talk about like the beer that they're drinking or something like that. And Mark is a bourbon guy. If you're in the Marco Polo group, you've seen his, you know, LED lights and all the bottles of bourbon. And it's one of the things that he really enjoys. So I told him to get a bottle of bourbon ready, get some bourbon. We'll drink some bourbon today. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So Mark, how are you doing this fine evening? And how was that, that intro?
That was a great intro, Adam. Really appreciate it. So yeah, the underwater basket weaving podcast that I listened to, the guy likes talking about beer, and it's kind of interesting because he introduced it from all over the place, but I mean, so many beers out there. I don't follow it that closely, but I thought, man, bourbon, it's a little narrower field. So on your request, this is one of my favorite bottles right here. Smoke Wagon, straight bourbon whiskey. They're out of Las Vegas, Nevada. The guy who started it, his name's Aaron. Started in his garage not that many years ago, like 6-8 years ago, and now they're big and nationally distributed. And so I only have to drive a couple states away to find it. So there you go. That's what I'm having. How about you?
So this one is, I think it's pretty local to us. It's from Three Oaks, Michigan. It's the Journeyman Distillers Featherbone Bourbon. And
that's a good one.
I really do enjoy this one. It's been going down pretty well the last few weeks here.
Now you need to hold up your glass because that's a gentleman's pour right there.
Well, I'm in it for the long haul.
And you're serious about that.
I told you my day, you know, I had to work like this whole week, which is like absurd for me. I think I'm on like day 8 of 9 or something like that. And, you know, for most people, like I understand like people are like, that's my normal week. But like, I try not to do that. You know, most people say, well, I wish I could do that. Well, like I wish I could too. And that right now.
Now you are.
Yeah. And I have to, I got to work 4 days in November. So that's what I'm building up for. So I'm kind of front loading or whatever, just because of the way that everything lines up. But question on the bourbon real quick. Sure. Like, so some of these bourbons, so my brothers are super into bourbon, and it's like, well, these ones you can't find anywhere and you got to go 3 states away. And they're super expensive. So what are we looking at in terms of availability and cost?
This bottle in every state I found it in is $35.99. You can get it in Ohio, you can get it in Illinois, you can get it in Iowa, obviously Nevada, I'm not sure where else, but there's a lot of states that have it. This is probably their entry point for this particular brand, and they you know move on up from there as far as cost. This one's interesting. I kind of chase it, that this guy Aaron, he designs the label himself, so this is their standard label, and I kind of chase these labels like McDonald's toys. But they every Halloween, 4th of July, and Christmas they put out a different label on the same bottle of bourbon. So for those people who like to collect things like me, he got me, because I got like 12 bottles of this down there, all with different labels on them, but same juice in the bottle.
All right. So that's what Mark's been chasing here on this podcast. He's like, you know, you need to do a bourbon intro. And here we are. This is where we're at. So let me know how you think this went, if you want this to be a continuing segment on the show, or we can definitely do it when Mark's around. Maybe it'll earn me an invite to Missouri finally. But anyways,
if you want another invite, I'll invite you. Let's go. You know what? Let's go this weekend.
This weekend?
Yeah, let's go. We'll leave Thursday.
So I'm heading to Indiana this weekend to hunt with our good buddy Eric. So that's the kind of guy Mark is he would rather bone our good friend Eric out of a hunting experience just to make a point. So he can say he invited me and I declined. So anyways.
Again, declined again.
Yeah. So decoy strategy. So let's talk about how did you get into using decoys? And so Mark's had a lot of success here in Michigan using decoys where, you know, it's one of those things where everyone will tell you like, A, Michigan's not a big buck state. B, we don't have the deer. We don't have the genetics. We don't have the management, any of this stuff. And, you know, wherever you fall on that, it just kind of falls into the so much hunting pressure. Like I said, those tricks don't work here in Michigan. And, you know, Mark hunts, he's got a couple of private pieces that he hunts, but it seems like the one is kind of where it all happens like year after year. They're not learning from the tactics. But where did this all start? Like you watched Lee and Tiffany use a decoy and you're like, you know what? I got to get one of those.
No, not at all. Honestly, the property you're referring to, I was sitting there 4 years ago and it was first weekend, I believe, had a deer come out in the field and it was a smaller buck and I'm back off field on the other side about 50 yards in. I look across field with my binoculars and I can see that there's a bachelor group of bucks and out of the group, the biggest one was a 10 point and it was a very respectful Michigan deer and the whole group. I mean, there was probably 4 8 points in that group. And I tried my grunt. I didn't even have my antlers with me, but you know, when you're 50, 60 yards in the woods on this side, you got a field out there, they're 20, 30 yards in the woods on the other side. How do you get them to close that distance? And I didn't have a bag of tricks. I mean, I'm literally just sitting there realizing that I'm just sitting there hoping that this deer comes by. But I tell you what, tomorrow I'm going to be mobile. I'm going to move over there. And I did. I moved my stand over there the next day. Didn't see the deer again. But that prompted me that next night I was sitting in the stand and literally ordered this decoy from Dick's Sporting Goods. So got done, went to Dick's, picked it up the day after and hosed it off, tried getting the scent off, and then I just drove it out, put it in my spot. That was literally year one of decoying for me, and I think it was, I believe it was 4 years ago now. So yeah, I put it out and just laid it down on its side, threw a couple branches on it, and started using it from there. And that year, I think I hunted over it like 5 days. And, I mean, you could probably add some videos to this, like down in the corner or something cool like that. All the different videos I sent you of deer coming up to my decoy, because I found it pretty amazing. Like does would get a little spooky, a little weird. And actually this year when I shot this buck, I had a couple of does come in the field and they were like right there. And they're like, man, this thing's not moving. It's weird. I don't like it. And they kind of bug out and I've had does blow and take off. And I realized that it didn't disrupt things quite as bad as I thought it was going to. But what did end up happening is I would see a buck and they would come up to the decoy. So using some of that, using some of that intel, it's a little against what a lot of people online are saying, but I always put the decoy real close to me and I put it parallel to me. So whatever direction I think they're coming from, I want them to get a good visual of it.
Real quick, yeah, like,
yeah,
the world is 360 degrees. So everything you put out is parallel to you from some angle. So In terms of the wind or, like line of sight, like let's just talk about it from like expected deer travel and then wind direction.
Sure. I if your decoy is clean, so let me start with a decoy. If the decoy is clean, I don't feel like the wind direction matters as much as far as the decoy goes. I say that based on numerous interactions that I've had where a mature buck will come up. I sent you that video last year that that buck walked right up and is pawing the ground right at the rear end of my decoy. He got downwind of my decoy, and he's about 5 feet away from it, and he's just pawing at the ground and pawing at the ground. I can't say I'm an expert in that, but it didn't seem like he really cared. So as far as the decoy goes, I'm not really playing the wind as far as decoy location. Now, if I think the buck that I'm after, or I'm hoping that a buck is traveling, you know, with his nose into the wind or quartering into the wind, or, you know, whatever you're following there, I put the decoy in a location to where I believe that based on how they're traveling, they'll be able to see it. So the deer I shot last year, there's...
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Field. I'm sitting off the corner of the field a little ways. There's a trail coming up from the south side of the field, and then there's a corner cut trail going from the corner of the field over to the trail coming up to the south side of the field. So my feeling was, based on the wind direction, that the deer were going to be traveling from the east heading west. What ended up happening is this buck came from the south. And that corner cut trail, I'd put the decoy out there so that that deer would have, if something did come up that trail, that deer would have line of sight to the decoy. So when I did see a deer coming, put my binoculars up, yep, he has antlers, didn't know exactly what he was. But when I saw him, I grunted at him to just kind of let him know, hey, over here. And he looked up, saw my decoy, and I was like, ooh, he saw it. This could be good. And put his head down. And the funny thing that I found with these mature bucks, they don't, like an immature buck gets immediately responsive and they come right up and they're interested. A mature buck is more like when I was like in college and a girl at a bar pretending like she doesn't notice you. It's more like that. He saw it, and I knew that he saw it, but he puts his head down and he keeps walking straight forward instead of coming right to the decoy. But his body language immediately changed. He went from a nice, easy gait and walking to he bristled up, and whatever you call that, I call it bristling up when they stick all their hair out. And he started stomping instead of just walking. And he goes up and he starts working a scrape, and I could hear the dirt hitting the ground, hitting the trees like 20 feet behind him, because he was just pawing the ground so hard. And he ended up coming in. And when I say parallel to me, based on what direction I think I'm going to be shooting, because like you said, it's 360 degrees. So from my experience, the buck, you know, that's responding to the decoy will come up, and you've probably seen this when two bucks are getting ready to spar, they don't just walk up head on and, you know, put their antlers together. If you watch their body language ahead of time, they parallel each other and they kind of come in at close distance and do this. And a lot of times they'll come around, smell at each other's tail, much like a dog does. But that's what I'm finding that these animals will do when they see my decoy. Somewhat mature bucks will come in and kind of walk parallel to the decoy, but they're also trying to get behind it. And I've listened to many things that say that they're looking for like a cheap shot. They're going to stick their antlers right in the ass of your decoy. Personally, I haven't seen that yet, but very typically they recognize a decoy, or they recognize it as a buck, and they go to the ass end of it. And I feel like they're probably trying to get downwind, but very typically they will do a couple of like parallel passes prior to going to the ass end of the decoy. So when I say I'm setting it up parallel to me, this is where I'm hoping to shoot. And I would love it if a buck would come in broadside right there. That's how I set it up. I've watched several things where guys will set up a decoy 30 yards out, which is great. But I'd prefer, just seeing what I've seen, I'd prefer a 10-yard shot. I mean, the deer that I shot the other day was at like 6 or 7 yards. My rangefinder only goes to 10 yards minimum, so I couldn't range the spot. I tried, and it just said, you know, nothing, hit 3 slashes across, telling me it couldn't range it. I think probably the most important part that I tell a lot of my buddies that are asking me about using a decoy is I leave it out there on the ground. I put it in my truck as minimally as possible, which I understand is much harder to do on public land. If you're leaving a stand out there, I mean, if you can hide it under some branches or whatever, I think that the keeping it scent free is pretty important. Right now, I have it at the property. It's about a mile down the road, just sitting out there laying in the field with some branches over it. I feel like that's an important point that can't be stressed enough. This particular decoy, I mean, I think you've talked about it before. It's huge. It's a big decoy. It's a pain in the ass to pack it up, get it in and out. But in the room that I'm sitting in right now, I have 4 deer that I've shot over that decoy. So I feel like, for me anyways, I feel like it does make a difference, and it's worth the pain in the ass.
So don't get me wrong here, that it's effective, right? And I want to talk about time of year and things like that, but just because you're talking about the, leave it to Mark to be talking about the size of his decoy, right? But you know, you said yourself it was like a kind of impulse purchase, you know, to some degree, you know, there was thought provoked, but like, do you think that, or would you consider like trying a different decoy or smaller decoy? Cause I mean, I would like to say like, oh, well, what makes your decoy the best decoy? And you're like, well, I leave it out in the woods and it's the one I have. Right. So there's a little bit of that.
I honestly, like if it had to be ultra realistic, my decoy wouldn't work. My decoy is not the best decoy. I have no, honestly, like I love this decoy cause it's improved my bow hunting dramatically. I mean, you know, from the time I shot my first buck, Adam was the one that got me into hunting. Everybody's heard that. And that buck's over there on the wall. From the time I shot that buck until the next one that I mounted was, I think it was either 18 or 19 years. I shot a lot of little bucks in between, but about 18 or 19 years. And then after that, so I got a decent one here in Michigan. And then the next year is when I got the decoy because I couldn't close the distance. And there's plenty of bucks in those years in between that, oh man, that deer crossed the field over there. I'm going to move my stand over there for the night sitter for tomorrow or, you know, whatever. And I did a lot of that. But yeah, it's not a brand brand loyalty thing, I would definitely try a smaller decoy. I actually have a two-dimensional decoy in my closet in the other room that I'm planning on bringing down to Missouri with me here in a week and a half. I honestly don't think that it has to be that precise or that perfect. Mine's not. It's just the one that I bought. It was honestly, it was the one that was on sale and I could get it that day. So that was my impulse there. I wanted to close that distance. I guess going to that, the deer I shot this year, it was out there. I do have the Tacticam video, by the way, so I can get with you on that. But I was out there and it was 10 minutes before last light, and I promise you, I would not have shot that deer if it wasn't for the decoy. That buck walked out in the field and checked him with my binoculars. I'm like, oh, he's a shooter. Had no idea what he was exactly. And so turn on my camera, Tacticam, and then my Sony.
And they turned off my camera.
Oh God. I was having a literal shit fit when I realized that, but regardless. And then I grabbed my snort wheeze that I just re-engineered and gave him a little toot on the old snort wheeze, and that thing looked up, did the same thing as that other buck I was telling you about. It was like he knew he was boss because he looked up, he put his head down for a second like he's going to continue feeding, and I saw him bristle up, and I'm like, oh, here we go. So I pick up my bow, and I'm hanging onto my bow, and I didn't even know that I had done this, but I had the Tacticam pointed directly at him. So I got a video of him walking all the way up. He came all the way up to within about 10 feet of my decoy, did the same thing that other really mature buck that I got a video of did, and started pawing the ground. Literally, it looks like he's making a scrape. About probably 2 foot wide by 3 foot long, dug down deep, like pissed, just throwing dirt. And I had a lot of confidence that he wasn't just going to stand there head on, because my decoy was parallel to me. So he came the direction I wanted him to, decoy's parallel to me, and got my release on. And I was like, okay, he's good. As soon as he turns broadside, I'm going to draw back. So yep, turns broadside, draw back, shot him, like I said, 6, 7 yards, 8 yards, maybe, I don't know, somewhere under 10 yards, pretty easy shot. And he took off on a dead run and went maybe 50 yards and piled up right there in the food plot.
So one of the things when you're explaining that to me, and especially when you're talking about that deer in particular, it never really dawned on me, like, the thought process of one of these deer. And kind of that, you know, I guess maybe it's from like messing up so many times. Maybe it's from like being like, oh, public land deer do this. And there's this whole thing like, oh, they're so pressured and all these things, which, you know, there's a lot to that. But when you say that these deer see the decoy, in that particular instance right there, where you say, well, it's like last light or 10 minutes before dark, and, you know, from glassing, from observation sits, from probably what you saw prior to using the decoy, you know, it's always those bigger bucks that are the last ones out into the field. And it just kind of made me think, like, I wonder, and I mean, you probably can't answer this either, but if those deer see that decoy and think, well, there's a big deer out in the field already, it must be safe or something, you know, like that. They lose that sense of, I don't know, like fear or whatever. Like, not that it's like comforting, but they're like almost like overcome with rage. You're like, oh shit, there's another big deer out there. And then that thing kicks in where they're like, wait a minute, like I'm the big deer here.
Well, and I think that I had, like, I don't know about you, but when I have other deer around me, one, I don't like the sets of eyes, but two, those are like confidence deer, because then I feel exactly what you're saying. When the target deer comes in, or a deer that you're going to shoot comes in, these other deer that are out there kind of give it confidence. Oh, everything's good. Look at all these eyes looking around. I can go out there and just feed, and I'm calm. And like, typically, if there's one deer in a field, I think that a lot of times they're down and then they're up and they're looking, and then they're down and they're up and they're looking. But if you have four or five deer, a lot of times three or four of them are feeding and the other couple are looking around. It's almost like they have this unspoken pact that we're going to have a set of eyes up. So I do think that it gives the deer confidence having something else in the field. I have used the decoy like that. You know, down in Missouri, we can use minerals. So I have lucky buck spots, and I've put my decoy directly on the lucky buck. And that's when the deer come up, they stop 100 yards away and they're looking to see if there's something on that lucky buck. I don't think they're looking for me. I think they're looking to see, are there other deer in there already? And I will tell you this, if you start using a decoy, you'll see a lot of, like, that night, a week ago or whatever now, when I was sitting out there, there was like 5 doe and a 4-point. And that 4-point wouldn't come in less, you know, it wouldn't close 150 yards. Didn't want anything to do with this but big old decoy. And I turn the antlers in and make him look as small as possible. But, I mean, it's a good buck for Michigan anyway. So I think it's a little bit, probably a little bit big. But every mature buck that I've seen, and I can't think of one that it didn't happen, but every mature buck that I've seen has come in and checked out that decoy. If it's really small, they don't seem to come in, but I've had 6 points come in. I mean, you've seen all those videos of me, like, oh, look how calm they are, because something I honestly feel pretty confident in having that decoy out there, and that's why I lug it all around, because there's been a lot of situations over the years where it's like, man, that buck, you know, you grunt at a buck walking the other way at 100 yards and they don't give one single shit about you. But I feel if there's a decoy there, my strategy works a little better. And this is kind of what we talked about a few weeks ago when we talked, is, you know, being on public land, you have a lot of room to move around. And I have a benefit of having private land. But it also, the negative of being on private is you are kind of hemmed in. I mean, one of my pieces is 14 acres. The other one's 15 acres. There's not a lot of room to roam around. So if I see something that's 250 yards away, most likely it's not on my land. So, it, you know, to have something out there that can help close that distance, I feel like there's an advantage there to bringing them to you, because everybody in Michigan's got a grunt call. And I think that deer have heard a lot of different fake grunts, and they can pick those out pretty easily.
So one of the interesting things that I want to talk about, like, I guess specifically your successes, maybe in outside of Michigan, or your experiences outside of Michigan versus in Michigan. But Michigan, I want to talk about a time frame, because your time frame is like not typical great hunting time frame. And you can correct me and say, okay, well, I've used it in the rut too, and it works pretty good. But you've got like this weird little window that seems to work out pretty well for you.
Well, I'll tell you my time frame with a decoy is, if I go out in the woods and I'm bringing my bow, I'm bringing my decoy. In the last couple of years, there's never been a time where I was like, man, I wish I didn't have that decoy. But there's been a couple of times where it's like, oh, I'm going to Missouri and it's a spot that's a mile and a quarter or so walk. I don't feel like bringing the decoy, and then I'm kicking myself for not doing it. Or I have my decoy over there and I'm going over to this other spot and I call the buck in, and biggest buck of my life by far, and he didn't close that last little bit. I think that the decoy would have helped me in that scenario. But yeah, my weird little time frame is beginning October, when a lot of guys are not having a lot of success killing matured animals. But I think that's probably more just shit house luck and the fact that I'm out there. But also, you know, with specifically relating to the decoy, they're responding to it. It's not as aggressive, but they are responding to it. I think they're curious by nature. You have the video of my shot last year and the year before that. I can give you the video of my shot this year. And in all instances, the buck comes right in, and then they parallel, and they're not moving fast. I mean, I really feel like the decoy didn't make me a better hunter, but it covers up a lot of my sins, because the one I shot 2 years ago over here at the family farm, he was looking directly my way, but his eyes were focused on the decoy. So I'm up there, moving around, draw my bow back and everything. He has no idea. I mean, he was at 12 to 15 yards. No idea I was there. He was so intent on that decoy. And that was October 10th. We're not in the middle of the rut. They're not rut crazed or anything like that. But if you're looking at your cameras, you will see that the deer, they're starting to spar before our season starts in Michigan. They're not going at it hard. They're just kind of touching antlers, pushing each other around a little tiny bit, and that's it. That one that I shot 2 years ago, let's check this little 4-point over here, check that little 6-point or whatever over there, and then walked up to my decoy. But with both of those other bucks, it pushed them around just a little bit. I mean, just kind of touching antlers together, and that was it. Kind of sizing each other up is what I would say. And then comes right in and parallels the decoy. And I got a shot on a great Michigan buck.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way, with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Do you think that maybe part of that, like curiosity or whatever, is that they're, because it sounds like they're still kind of like in these little bachelor groups at that time, and they're like, who the hell is that? Like, what's going on? You know, all my buddies are here. He's not supposed to be there, or, you know.
Oh, I 100% believe that's what it is. A lot of people talk about a decoy with, they're with a hot doe, and they're kind of covering off on that doe, and they're going to boot this other guy out of the area. And I 100% believe that it's more of a curiosity thing. When they're pushing these other little bucks around the field, it's not some big knockdown drag out fight at all. Like I said, they'll just barely touch antlers, and usually the inferior buck will kind of like prance away, but he stays in the field. But just saying, hey, you know, it's like a dog rolling over on its back. Okay, you're the boss. I'm submitting, and it seems like that's what they're doing. And when they come over, I mean, the one that I sent you the video of last year, I would say that was probably like a 6-year-old buck, all busted up, just gnarly heavy main beams, and all the points were broken off except for the one. It was like an inch long, and just grayer than gray, and he came in, and when he snorted at it, it was like a raspy COPD snort, like standing right next to the decoy and just pawing at the ground 5 feet behind the decoy. And it's cool to see. I've never heard a deer vocalize like that before, but I kind of just took that information and worked it in a little bit, that it's not always a clean snort wheeze when you're doing a snort wheeze. I tried working a little rasp into my snort wheeze after that.
So as you use a decoy later in the season and into the rut, does placement change? Does the deer response to it change? And like, I guess from that whole, like, a hot doe and a buck trying to push that other buck out of there or whatever, you know, we've all been in these situations. If you've been in the woods enough at the right time of year, and I can say, like, honestly, like, I've been in the woods maybe 5 total days in all of my years of hunting where it's just on, you know, it's those days that you live for where there's bucks running around everywhere. And, you know, you'll have a doe run by you, and then all of a sudden it's buck, and then another buck, and then another buck. And then they're, you know, 2 minutes later, they're over there just running around and all grunting and everything. You know, in that situation where you feel like there's nothing you can do, right? Where you grunt, you whistle, you stop, you yell, hey, you're like, come on. And then you're sitting up there and there's just these deer everywhere. And you're kind of like, well, what am I going to do now? I mean, maybe that's just me. But so have you had a decoy out in those types of situations? And how do those deer react in that?
I would say that I haven't had that as much, but kind of like you, you've only been out there a handful of days. Same thing. I've only been out there all the days I've spent hunting. I've only been out there a handful of days where I was like on the X and I'm like, hot doe runs by, buck goes by, another buck goes by, another buck goes by, and then the doe comes ripping past this way. And like, I've only had that buck over there when I shot him. There was probably 4 other shooters in my food plot over here in this little tiny quarter acre food plot. And all hell was breaking loose. There were so many deer running around. It was absurd. But I haven't had that much experience with the decoy to really be able to speak to it. I will say that I've had it where the decoy is out there. I know that there's a hot doe in the area and a buck came through, nose to the ground, searching for this hot doe. And he just goes blazing through. And I'm like, well, that was interesting. I don't think he even saw the decoy or noticed it or anything. So I grunted at him. He turns, looks at the decoy, comes flying back right up to the decoy, stops, does about a circle around it, and then just goes back the direction he was originally heading. And it was like, not like a full circle because I had it tucked right up against trees, but it was kind of like it did like almost like a parallel at once. And it's like, nope, I don't care. I'm out of here. And continued on its path, and it went all the way around this field that I was sitting on. It was like 150 acres, all the way down this tree line, all the way up the other edge, all the way. I mean, this deer was traveling. That was one that makes you understand why bucks get so skinny during the rut. But they'll come in, check it. I would almost say the early season, you know, that chase phase or the pre-rut activity is where I've had my success. But I've also been in some fortunate situations where I haven't been hunting as much during the rut because I have my tags filled. So I'm sitting on my couch watching lions and drinking bourbon.
So in that scenario, and that's what I wanted to ask, like when you're using the decoy and you're saying you're bringing it, you know, pretty much every time that you go, in that instance, it doesn't sound exactly like the other scenarios. Are you setting this up on the field edge, or like what has your experience been like in the timber? You know, because it still needs to be visual, all that sort of stuff.
So I'm getting it out there where I think that they can see it the best. You know, and that's one of the things about hunting where a decoy is. I think that it's like my long range attractant. You know, same thing I say about my rattling antlers. Like a grunt call, I think they're only going to hear so far. You're rattling to them, and that buck that I rattled in last year was 150, 180 yards. I mean, it was way down there going the opposite direction. That's one where I'm really kicking myself for not having decoy out, because I would have put that in the timber pretty much right underneath me just so that they could see it from the field and from the timber. But, you know, when I'm setting up in a spot, you know, with more timber, I still want it. You know, if you're walking along where I happen to have it out at the family farm, it happens to be in a spot where if you're walking along, all the trees line up. And I'm like, oh, if I was sitting there with a shotgun, I'd have like an 80 or 90 yard shot. Well, it's just a visual zone for the decoy. I just want them to be able to see it from as far away as they possibly can. The buck I'm referring to from last year, when I rattled at him, he turned around and came in, and he closed the distance all the way to like 20 yards. I think it might have actually been like 17 yards, but still he was behind some shit that I couldn't shoot through. And I feel like if I would have had the decoy there, he would have closed the distance all the way, but he stopped right there on the edge of this ditch and looking around, and whatever was making the rattling sound, he couldn't see it. And he started getting spooky and looked like he was going to bail. So, kicking myself for not having the decoy on that day, but I was being lazy because it was way back in the woods over at a different farm, and I just didn't bring it with me. So I've actually thought about getting an extra decoy just so that I have one that I can be more mobile with, because it is a pain in the ass hauling these things all over the place.
Well, I'm really interested. I've been looking at those like Montana two-dimensional decoys. The guy from ARD, Tim Zelinka, he was just telling me, you know, that I need to get one for Kansas, and he killed his buck last year over one, and he's got video of it. And, you know, it's strange because it's sitting there, you know, kind of even like blowing around, but there's deer all around it and, you know, coming in. And the buck he killed was, I mean, I held the antlers. That's like, it's a freak. Like, I think it was, I don't know, I want to say it was like 160 or something like that. But it was all mass. The thing must have weighed 20 pounds. Like, it's nuts. And it just walked right up to this flat piece of tent material, you know? And so I've considered it for going out to Kansas. Now, you know, last we left off with you, you were hunting these mega giants in Missouri. And you went down there. You just hunted down there the one time this year so far? One trip?
Yeah. We went down there for 2 days. It was a Saturday, Sunday.
And so how did that go? What'd you learn? What's going on down there? And I haven't got any more pictures from you on that, so I'm not sure. Keeping everything close to the vest.
Oh, I can send you the pictures. Those deer are still there. But so when I went down there, the whole plan was like a 23-year-old's plan. So I was flying from Seattle to Chicago, getting Chicago at midnight. My buddy was picking me up in my truck, and we're driving to Missouri. So I say it was a 23-year-old's plan because I didn't map it from Chicago to Missouri. I'm like, well, you know, if you got to drive from here to Chicago, that's like, you know, 3.5 hours. So it's probably going to be like 3 hours to Missouri. Now it's like 5 hours and 15 minutes to Missouri. So he picked me up. Actually, when I left Seattle, I'm like, I'm going to get some sleep on the plane, so I'm going to drink some bourbon. And I was in Comfort Plus, so they just kept bringing me bourbon. So by the time I got to Chicago, I was a bag of dicks, never slept. Threw my stuff in. I think we're on the road by like 12:30, drove our 5 hours to Missouri, got one speeding ticket, and got to Missouri, unloaded a little bit of stuff. We both showered separately and went out and went hunting. And it was horrible. I felt so, I felt so off. I was feeling my age that day. The part that I didn't realize is when I was in Seattle at this big conference, I ended up getting COVID again. So so I wasn't exactly feeling myself. And I was telling Andrew all weekend, man, I just feel weird. I don't know what's going on. I just feel weird. And yeah, I got back home and realized I had COVID. So I was pretty sick that whole week. But we ended up hunting, I guess it was Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday morning went for the hunt. And I'm like, our plan was to hunt Sunday night and then drive the full like 7.5 hours back Sunday night after the night hunt. I'm like, there's no way I can do that, you know. So we during that hunt, we weren't seeing a lot. It was mid-90s. I mean, it was hot. Saw a lot of chiggers, got a lot of chigger bites everywhere. And it was a little bit of a chess match because we're out there, all the crops are up. The deer are definitely in the crops. And the one spot that's way back in there that I was hunting, I decided that I wasn't going to hunt that Sunday morning. I was going to hunt a spot that's easier to get to because I was just worn out. And so sitting over in this other spot, and one of our target bucks that we got named, it's on camera and everything, was in front of the camera at that farm for like 45 minutes. He'd leave and then he'd come back. He's just in front of the camera, and then he'd leave again and he'd come back and he's hanging out in front of the camera. I'm like, that would have been fun. I mean, it would have been cool to shoot him. It's a great buck. I mean, it's probably 145, 150, just all of it, you know. It's got all the stuff. It's got long main beams, tall points, quite a bit of mass. Had about a 5-inch kicker coming off the bottom of its right beam that it's since lost, but it was coming right out over its eye. And I guess I wanted to call it a drop tie, and I think it's more of a kicker, but it looked pretty cool. But it's since lost that, so that's a bummer, but still a nice buck.
Yeah, so you definitely can't shoot him this year because, you know.
Oh, yeah, next year that's going to be so much better.
Yeah, this year, you know, we don't shoot anything with broken tines. We don't shoot, you know, we don't shoot up and comers. Like, no way. No way.
I think you forgot who you're talking to, buddy. I got that buck over your left shoulder. You realize you're talking to the guy that has a whole pile of those in the garage.
That, you know, of all the deer, I was thinking about this as we were talking. I was like, the two on either side are private land and that one's public land, Michigan. And yeah. I think that kind of like sums up my hunting career. But the deer over my left shoulder there, that's the one that I messed up on a really nice one the morning. And then both my brothers killed deer. And we, in 30 years of hunting, we never killed deer on the same day. And you know, even with rifles, the level of commitment that my brother Drew has to bow hunting
is it more or less than rifle?
It's less than a rifle, but his rifle hunting is more to get out of work than it is to kill a deer or even sit in a stand. So the fact that he went out that morning and killed a deer, and then Dustin was in South Dakota, killed a big mule deer, and then I missed. I'm like, I'm the one that screwed it up. And so that's the buck that came in, and I wasn't going to miss again. I wasn't missing out on that memory. And, you know, the thing is like, you know, Frank's over there with the four wheeler. He's like, I'm not going in there. You know, where I shot that deer. And Drew's like coming with me. And again, he does not have the drive to like go in. You know, my brother Dustin, he'll go in and waders and, you know, take his boat in and do all the things. My brother Drew's like, yeah, that's cool for you guys. I'll be back at the camp with the bourbon.
Well, and we just kind of did something that I actually hate. And it seems to be such a part of our hunting culture. But when you know, I see it all the time on Facebook because I'm on all these different groups like you are, and somebody will shoot one and immediately, like their very first post, hey, I shot this deer. It's not the biggest. It's no trophy. All that shit. I hate that shit. Like I wish, I don't know how to cure it because I mean, I hate it and we're still doing it. Like I have deer sitting behind me that are not world records. I have a bunch of deer on the wall, and it's kind of like every bike race I've ever been into. I'm not going to win every bike race. Probably not going to place in most of them. None of these deer are world record deer, but you're not going to be the person who gets first place. And that's the thing that we, as a kind of a hunting society, I think we need to change. We need to stop shitting on the deer that we're shooting. Like, this is an awesome, awesome sport. I love it. And I'm guilty of it just as much as everybody else, because I consider a deer nice or not nice. But for myself, like I changed a few years ago because I realized that I was shooting a lot of deer and cutting antlers off and throwing them in a box. And there's a lot that we need to do especially Michigan land, where there's a lot of doe. I mean, our herd is way, way out of balance here. So I feel like if I'm not going to mount it on the wall, I'm going to shoot a doe instead. And that's just my personal philosophy, not shitting on anybody else's deer, but if I'm not going to mount it on the wall, I'm going to shoot it down. And that's just what I've been doing for like 5 years now.
Well, and that's the thing about that deer in particular, is that one probably means more to me than like a lot of the deer that I've killed. I mean, I got a whole bench full of them over there. And it's funny because, like, you know, world's worst bow hunter, right? And then it's like, oh shit, there's a box of antlers over there. And like, oh yeah, I forgot about those. You know, like, you know how it goes. You shoot them and you're like, oh yeah. But in the moment, like, you can't take that away. Like, I don't think it's the sentiment. I don't think it's the, like, shitting on the deer. And like I said, like that little 6-point, probably means more to me than, a lot of the deer that I've killed, a lot of the big ones. Because like I said, like in 30 years, like my brothers and I, even with rifles, have never killed 3 yearling does on the same day. Maybe not even the same trip. I mean, we could have, you know, a couple of years ago, except for I missed with a rifle twice. I killed an elk at like 300 yards with somebody else's rifle, missed with mine in bow range, and then missed again. And it's just the way that it goes. So to be able to kill 3 deer on the same day, I mean, that's super cool. And like to get,
oh yeah, that's
like
awesome
redemption on that. But I think, like, again, I say it with like, however you want to get into like, politics and worldview and like people, feeling other people's feelings for them. We live in a society today where, news and everything spreads so quickly. Our availability to information is, and then for algorithms and AI to keep putting the same things in front of us, because we saw that everybody thinks that that 100 to 140 inch deer is like the standard. It's like, that's what you need to do. And so many guys, especially that are starting out, and you would be one of them, I think, you know, you come in like to like get serious about hunting, or like to be like, okay, I want to do archery now. And it's later in life, and it's like, well, I'm supposed to be killing these bucks, but I don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know, you know, and I'm talking about like when you first bought your first bow and you were shooting arrows 7 feet over the target. And we were like, those arrows are still behind Frank's house somewhere, because we never found them. You know,
I don't even want to know how many arrows there are buried in. Somebody's going to like do something in Grand Haven and they're going to find like 100 aluminum arrows in that backyard.
So, but that's the thing, is like, you get into it fast forward now where, you know, you pull up Instagram and you're like, oh, I like this company. Well, they're all killing these, you know, these w- w- great bucks, monsters, whatever. And it's just, that's the standard. And you're like, well, this is the buck. All those guys killed little bucks. They didn't just start killing big bucks, you know?
Oh, 100%. And that's like talking to my buddy Andrew that's going to Missouri with me because I like him a lot better than Adam.
And congrats to, you know, I was thinking about that. But anyways, congrats to Andrew on his first buck now.
He's right? a Patreon member. Yep. Oh, yeah, first buck. And that's what I was, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was clear with him because he was hunting my land, you know, just down the road here. And I felt like he was like adopting my standards, or even when we go to Missouri, I felt like he was adopting it. And I don't know if he was or not, but I wanted to make sure I was clear with him. Like, you know, Frank said it years ago, you got to get one under your belt. And that's resonated with me for so long because I'm doing a specific thing for me with all the days that I hunt, all the things that I'm doing. And it's probably more than a lot of guys. Like Andrew's in a situation where his wife's super understanding about him hunting and everything. She's actually really excited for him for hunting and all that stuff. But he's also newly married. It's a different situation when you're in your first couple of years of marriage. You know, there's a different situation when you have a baby at home. There's a new job. All that stuff plays in your situation and your amount of hunting days. And that I feel like really pertains to, you know, not that you couldn't go out and put out a decoy and have a great buck walk in, but, you know, kind of like a realization of how many days you're actually going to hunt and all those days, you know, subtracting out all your days without any opportunity at all. Like you didn't see any deer. So what does that leave you with? Because you're going to come out, you know, you got kind of like this gross and then you got a net and then your net is like, what are your real opportunities? Like how many deer are you going to have within 25, 30 yards? That's a small number. For me, I'm going for a specific thing and you're always pressing me on like, well, what exactly is that thing? I'm like, number one, it's something I feel really good about. I have a great story and, you know, like something that I'm passionate about. And I might not know it until it walks in front of me. You know, you might go, well, you know, Mark, why'd you shoot that deer? That's 140 inches. And there's that giant that all these guys I showed the picture to, you know, they said, I'd quit work and go hunt that deer. Well, yeah, that deer's out there somewhere, maybe. But to me, it's like, what, you know, what is the thing that really does it for me? Like, you know, what's going to make the story? What's going to make the adventure for me? What's going to make me seek to keep coming back and keep doing it over and over again? Cause it's just something that I enjoy. But I don't necessarily want to, like when my son was hunting, you know, he's 16 now and of course he's got a car and all that stuff. He's not as into it, but his first deer, he was like, well, Dad, that's only like, I think it was a 4-point. Dad, that's like a 4-point. Maybe it was a spike. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, I thought we were shooting 8 points. I'm like, dude, you're 7 years old. Just shoot the deer. Like if you like that deer, if that deer gets you excited. He was so excited. And I was like, man, I got a hunting buddy for life. I'm hoping he comes back to it. But and he shot a handful of bucks and as biggest as an 8-point, we got it mounted. That's, you know, it's great for him and he loves it. Doesn't hunt anymore.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hoping one day he comes back to it. Andrew, I'm so excited for him, man. He shot that four-point over there. And that was as thrilling for me to be a part of that as it was to shoot the 10-point that I shot. It was just cool experience and positive experience for him and for both of us, really. And so that's what I encourage people to do when they're out there hunting. Like, that's what's going to build our sport.
Yeah, I know. And I feel like I'm in a weird place, and I go to my buddy Josh. You know, he's tagged out this year, and you know, he's really big into fishing, you know. So he's like, well, you know, steelhead time and all this stuff. And it's like, I know, but he just put his boy on a deer, and his boy just killed a deer. And
do I know Josh?
Probably. You've met him.
Okay.
I won't put him on blast on here, but but yeah, so he's tagged out. He loves steelhead fishing and all this stuff. But I mean, we talk about it, especially like for turkey season. It's like one and done, right? Like, so as soon as you kill that turkey, it's over. So I would rather mess up on 100 turkeys with a bow and continue to get out there and hunt. And we've talked about that from a deer hunting perspective too, is like, you know, right now I feel like we're getting into like the best time of year. And like, this has been a weird year for me, because I hunted the Patreon hunt and had a ball, and I've been out two other times, seen deer. So yeah, I hit a doe, and didn't recover it. It was, brought a dog out there. Like, I hit it back. Like, the deer's dead. I just don't know. Like, I don't know what happened. Like, the blood just stopped. And we're limited on permission. I shot it behind Frank's house, and like where we could go and everything, and brought a dog in there, and the dog really didn't progress the track, and just a bad deal. But it kind of goes to like what I've said before, and especially, and I mean, it kind of even goes into like what we were talking about with Andrew there, and like new hunters in general. It's like, I feel like every year, like the first couple deer that I see, like, I get the yips, like, no matter what. Like, it's like, there's sometimes like last year where I was like, I think I'd been out enough and like had enough deer in front of me already where I was like, okay, I'm comfortable. But these were the first deer that like I had a opportunity to kill. And the difference was like, I hunted the whole Patreon hunt with my longbow, and I really thought I was going to get it done. Like, I had a doe like completely oblivious to that I was there, like at like 6 yards. Like, she just came up out of this grass, but it was like on my weak side. I got a 60-inch bow, so I'm not going over the bridge like easily. And then she came out, and she was like, she's probably 15 yards out, and I had like a, maybe like a football size, like, window between these two trees to make a quartering away shot. And I was like, you know, if she goes two steps, you know, over this way, then she's right. She did exactly what I was hoping for. Right. And then she just fed directly away from me like they always do. But if that was a, you know, the 30 pointer, right, if that was a 130-inch buck or something like that, like, I'd be losing my freaking mind. And yeah. I feel like, you know, being out with the compound, I was like, okay, well, here's these deer. Draw back. Like, I got it on video. Like, I probably should have shot her like when I first drew back, but like, because watching the video, like, it seems like an eternity, but like in my mind it happened so quickly. Like, in the moment it happened so fast. And, you know, so I'm at full draw, like, looking at this deer, and like, I don't know, she got behind some stuff, so I shot it like a weird angle. It was just a bad deal. But all that to say, like, generally speaking, I feel like that's what happens, right? Is that first deer, at least for me, like, I lose my freaking mind, and I'm like, oh, I gotta do it. Like, it's too pressing. And like, if you don't get a proverbial few under your belt, like, it doesn't, it, you know, those deer get close and you look, lose your damn mind, you know?
I'm telling you, man, that's like, and I'll say to some extent, I've kind of lost that. Like when I shot that buck last week, I was pretty cool. I was good. I was in shape and all. But I tell you what, last year in December, I'm down in Missouri. It's like, we're in our final hunt. Like literally all of our stuff was packed. We're going to get done hunting. We're driving back to Michigan. And I'm sitting down there, freeze my ass off. I got my decoy out. I'm back in the woods a ways. I think that the deer are going to come from over here on this ridge. I see a buck walk out and he's 200 yards away. Not a chance he can see my decoy because my decoy is back here, like in an opening in the woods. It's looking, I guess it was east. So I rattled him in and he comes down and he saw my decoy. And I don't know what, I mean, it was a great buck, probably mid 150s. Awesome buck. I was so shook. I couldn't do anything. I don't think I could have spelled my name at that point. I mean, I was so shook. And that was a really cool hunt for me because I kind of felt like I had, to some extent, like hunting had kind of become a little bit of an assembly line type of thing. Like you're repetition, repetition, repetition. You're out there. I mean, that was, I think, my the end of the second full week that I'd spent in Missouri. And it was just a lot of repetition, a lot of hours in the stand. And for whatever reason on that last hunt, I was just shaking like a leaf. And I mean, I'll tell you, I shot 10 feet over this deer. My hands were numb and everything, but I don't know what it was, but I like drew back. And as soon as I get back, I hit the release. And I mean, I don't have my pin on the deer. I'm not looking through my peep. I'm like coming down on it and I like shoot. what an idiot. But it was like I enjoyed telling that story because it just brought back all of what I really love about hunting. And that's the excitement of the chase. Like the, you know, not just going out there and like killing something to put on Instagram or send a pic to your buddies or whatever, but just that excitement of the chase and kind of the camaraderie of being able to share it with you and share it with Andrew. And, you know, I always send your brother's pictures and stuff like that. You know, especially like one thing I love about the decoys, you get a lot of deer in there really close. And so I send snaps to everybody of the decoy and videos of these deer coming up to the decoy. And to me, that's just like a really kind of cool additional thing that you see because it you see a little bit more of, I always call it deer acting like deer when they're out there and they're sparring or they're breeding or, you know, you hear weird vocalizations you don't normally hear. I feel like that's deer acting like deer when they don't know that you're there and you're kind of fooling them. That's a part of the chess game that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wonder if like, wouldn't help me. Because like I said, like I feel like, and like we talked about it on here for sure, is that like that first deer of the year that you're going to shoot or like whatever, it's everything seems to go sideways. And, you know, there's guys that talk about like drawing back on every deer that they see that's in range just to get those repetitions.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about that December hunt, it made me think of like, it was like Christmas Eve or like between Christmas and New Year's, I hunted one of Mark's properties and he's like, well, don't shoot any small bucks, but you know, you can shoot a doe over there and it's narrow. And these bucks came in and I got some really cool video and my bow's hanging there and I got my bow's a carbon bow that carbon's Ion. And I think it was the Icon at that time. But anyway, then this line of does comes through and I'm like, oh, I'm going to smoke one. And it was like five or six does. So the first couple go through and I'm like, all right, I'm going to shoot the last one. So I grab my bow and I grab the release. And so carbon bow, is like picking up a, like a warm, nice, you know, insulated, whatever. Grab my release and it's like holding on to an ice cube. And I draw back and I'm waiting for these deer. And it's like one deer goes by, two deer goes by. And I'm like, my freaking hand is like frozen solid. And I've been
like the kid in the Christmas story that stuck his like, tongue to the flagpole.
Yeah, my hand is like frozen to this release. And then here comes these deer and I'm like shaking, I'm freezing, you know, and I got this deer there and it's like, I think it was like 30 yards away. And if, I mean, they all did the same thing. So I knew the range, I knew everything. Like I was like locked up solid and I was like. Four in the
morning. Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.
This deer is going to continue running that same way, and it's going to end up on these people's driveway. And I'm like, I'm going to have to let down. Like, this is a bad, if it would have been a buck or something, like maybe I would have changed my thing, but I'm like, this is not, it's the last deer. So like, it was like a two sets of like does and fawns or like, you know, whatever. So it's not a very big deer. It was just like, this is the one I'm going to shoot because it's the last one. And I was like, I'm not doing like a international incident with the neighbors with on this. So, but to that point was like the confidence of like those deer never saw me. They never did anything. I got drawn back. I let down. They continued about their day. And I just wonder, you know, the guys that say that, if there isn't like something really to that, and like maybe that can help somebody, like when you're like, okay, well, I don't want to, you know, this isn't a deer that I'm going to shoot, but like to just go through those motions. But I think like there's enough like Uncle Frank instilled in me that I think if I got drawn back, like that deer I passed on in Ohio last year, the one I had on video, if I'd have got to full draw on that deer in that moment when I was videoing him and I like got anchored and I put the pin on him, like, I don't know that I would have been able to let down. I think I would have just let the arrow go. So I think there's like, there's you, I think mentally strong, like you have to like really know you're not going to kill that deer. Cause I love killing deer. Like that's something that like I really enjoy, and it doesn't matter like really what it is. And that's something that I'm struggling with. Not necessarily with Kansas, because like, I know that there's big deer in Kansas, and I've been watching some videos to look at like antler size and body size and stuff like that. But like this trip to Indiana is going to be like one where it's going to be difficult not to shoot like just the first 100-inch buck that comes in. Like if a 100-inch buck comes in, I'll probably shoot it. Just because I was telling some guy at work today, I'm like, I've never hunted Indiana. I've never even set foot on this property. So like, I don't know that I'm state land out there.
What are you doing?
Oh yeah. Okay. Like, no, Mark, we don't hang out at the Pizza Huts. Like we don't know these, you know how many people have like been like Googling Pizza Huts in Missouri that have told me like, well, I'm going to find this like Casey's and Pizza Hut.
Go find it. I mean, more power to you. That's all part of the hunt. That was my buddy Kurt. He'll tell you it's the best thing I ever did in my life. He's told me that several times. Mark, that's the best thing you've ever done. And those people I ran into in the Pizza Hut, they were gold. I have no idea how I ended up running into these people. And this many years later, I'm still invited back and they got a house for me. And I mean, the wife just texted me the other day and she's like, when are you coming down again? I'm like, what am I going down the second? And I'm like, hey, I'm coming down on the second. She's like, all right, your house will be ready for you. I got a house. Like they're so cool. And I have no idea why. I mean, you've known me most of my life. I'm not that great. I have no idea why these people like me.
So I guess we can kind of wrap this up, finish up with the decoy. Like, so if you were to tell somebody about decoying deer today, and like, I'm sure because of, I know you, like we said, you've looked at all the decoys out there and you've been online and you're like, okay, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Is there something better that I need or like whatever? If you were going to tell somebody to buy a decoy, like how would you go about buying one, or like what would you recommend? If anybody wants to follow along with your journey, like you just changed all of your stuff. So I'm like, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And So anyway, like what would you look for in a decoy?
So I bought the one with the name I can't pronounce, but I think it's like Flam Blue. It's the fishing tackle brand for when I was a little kid. They made all the tackle boxes, but that's what I bought. I've looked at a ton of them. I literally bought the one that I could have the next day. That was my reason for buying that one. And honestly, it's worked well. I beat the hell out of it. I throw it in my truck. I've dumped it off my truck. I've done all kinds of stuff. And there's a couple of things that I would, if I were helping Flam Blue with their design, there's a couple of things I would change to make it a little more sturdy. But, you know, if shit doesn't break, you don't buy new ones. So maybe it's by design. If you do buy it, it's almost like the guy at Dick's told me it was impossible to put it all back in the body. So I figured out the method. If you have a problem with that method, I'll teach you. It'll cost you like one bush light and I'll teach you how to do it. I've looked at the really expensive ones. I don't knock a shit on any brands. I'm sure they're great. I think, you know, the one that I got was $150, but it was $120 on sale, so that's what I bought. I think pretty much anything that gives you that look will do it. I can't say that anything about the one that I bought is necessarily special, other than it looks convincingly enough like a buck that they come up to it. And I can tell from 100 yards away it's a hunk of plastic, so they're not real discerning in that way. I'm going to try a two-dimensional decoy this year. I'm bringing that down with me just so I have something a little more portable, a little more mobile. My points are, I put it outside as soon as I get it and I leave it outside for the season. Even when I bring it home, it sits over here on the property line where my dogs can't get to it because I don't want scent on it. I put it parallel to me because every deer that I've ever seen that was interested in the decoy parallels the decoy. I put it closer than most articles and most videos say that you should put it, usually within like 2 to 5 yards of the base of the tree that I'm in. I would love to try it someday, moving with a decoy, like stalking with a decoy. I really feel like based on what I've seen, that would work, but I haven't been in a scenario where I could try to make that happen. But especially during the rut, I feel like closing distance with it would probably work. A lot of guys ask me, do you put scent on your decoy? There's a little scent wick hanger on there. I don't put any scent on my decoy. I have tried putting a scent wick like on a bush nearby or on the ground. Haven't noticed a significant difference enough to say, do this or do that, or, you know, I think this worked. I think it's more the visual of the decoy itself. So I just don't put scent on it because I don't want it to, if they don't like it, I don't want my decoy to smell like that. So, those are kind of the mainstays of my points about a decoy. And I try to do something that I think would be realistic. A lot of bucks, especially in Michigan, we're a really high pressure state. A lot of guys are out there with a grunt tube. I don't typically grunt. Sometimes I will, like if I have a situation, my grunt call's right there, whatever, I want to get deer's attention, I'll grunt at it. The one that I grunted at 2 years ago that was on that corner cut trail, I grunted at that deer and he looked at my decoy and it all came together. So I don't think that's bad. situation, but it's not my typical. I find the snort wheeze is super effective. I think it's an aggressive, challenging type of call. So I feel like if you have a mature buck, it's going to come. The other points about it to remember are it scares a lot of does that are hanging out in the field. I haven't noticed that that's to my detriment, so I'm not really worried about that. But if you put your decoy out and it scares does and you're like, oh shit, I don't like this, maybe try it again. But I mean, it's up to you. I'm not trying to push a decoy on anybody. And also little bucks, if you're looking for a 4-point, a 4-point typically doesn't want a challenge. It's not going to come up and be curious of an 8-point decoy. They don't seem to be scared of them. They don't seem to take off, but they keep their eye on it and they keep their distance. They're out there in the satellite, just like a satellite bull and an elk herd. They keep their distance from the herd bull. I think those are probably my bullet points.
And then if people want to follow along, like if they got questions for you or like how can they, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So on Facebook, it's Mark Slegel. I look like this. On Instagram, it's On The Hunt, but it's like a weird to get to On The Hunt. It was like underscore period On The Hunt period underscore. So if you look at any of the Bowhunter Chronicle stuff, I'm tagged on a lot of that stuff. So you could click there and click through to me if you want to see it. And if anybody wants to talk to me on Snapchat, that's what I'm hunting. I love Snapchat for hunting. My buddy Kurt got me into Snapchat when I'm hunting and take videos, all kinds of shit, and send it to all the people I think might be interested in it. So Adam and all of his brothers always get videos of deer, and then Adam's usually whining that he can't shoot the deer, so he doesn't want to see them or something like that.
Pretty much. How would they find you on Snapchat? Are you just bragging?
I think it's just Mark Slegel. I don't really know, honestly. Hold on. I'm an old man. I don't really understand the technology. I think it's just Mark Slegel. Yeah, looks like it's just Mark Slegel on Instagram, or on Mark underscore Slegel on Snapchat.
For all you young kids, get on the old snappy chatty with Mark.
If you're a Patreon, I do get on the Marco Polo every once in a while. It is so hard to keep up with all the videos on there, though. You guys are way more talkative than I am. So I try.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Mark, and I'm glad that we were able to do this. Brought to you by Smoke Wagon and Journeyman Distillery Bourbon. Pick you up some, right? All right, guys. Later.
Fish are where you think they are. Any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.